TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo! Boy, Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash, we'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of The Outsider's Edge. Carl is not here again. Hashtag bring back Carl. But we're going to hold it down for him. Me and my boy Kyle. Kyle Morris, how you doing, sir?
Doing great. Carl, we miss you. We really look forward to your column that's coming out soon, everybody.
2020 Royal Rumble, I'm telling you.
It's going to be the greatest.
It is going to be 567 words.
Shoot, you're giving him way too much credit.
You're right. 345.
Yeah. But it's coming, y'all. It's coming. Hashtag bring back Carl.
It will be eloquently formatted.
But, you know, speaking of Carl, he wanted us to deliver a message to some people about a certain topic. So, Rance, why don't you introduce the topic, and I will tell everybody what our boy Carl wanted us to let them know.
We wasn't even going to talk about this, and literally like an hour before we started recording this, Carl hit us up with this. But so, in today's news, Dave Bautista, who has been very adamant about how he feels ostracized by WWE, because, you know, he wants to come back, he wants to wrestle some more, he'd love to do house shows, he wants a final Mania match, this, that, and the other. Well, SmackDown's 1000th episode is in Washington, D.C. Dave Bautista's from Washington, D.C. Dave Bautista was the face of SmackDown. Just made sense. And Bautista had never got an invite. Well, today, Dave Bautista will be at SmackDown's 1000th episode, October 16th. And not only will he be there, but it will be the reformation of Evolution. So that's huge news in the wrestling world. However, our wonderful IWC brethren have to find something to hate. And there is massive, massive disappointment and, dare I say, slight backlash that not that Dave is back, because I think most people have come to respect Dave as a performer. And if nothing else, they respect the fact that Dave left and got bigger. You gotta respect that. But that Evolution, formerly a Raw stable, will be making an appearance on SmackDown's 1000th episode. And, Brother Morris, our esteemed brethren Carl would want to say what?
Our esteemed brethren Carl would want to say that if you are pissing in everybody's Cheerios about this, you can go fuck yourself.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, all right, Evolution was a Raw stable. For sure. Yeah, they were.
Sure.
Fine. I'll accept that.
Absolutely.
Bautista was one of the faces of SmackDown during the original brand split, along with The Undertaker. Like, Bautista was the guy on SmackDown. I'd put Rey Mysterio in that category as well. Those four guys were the cornerstones of SmackDown, the first brand split go around. Also, let's not pretend Randy Orton hasn't spent a good portion of his career on SmackDown.
He's there currently.
Yeah, Randy Orton is also the only member of Evolution who is currently a full-time performer. So, you know, SmackDown 1000, it's a one-time thing. It's a big deal that this show has made it to 1,000 episodes. And it's one of the few times that they're going to actually highlight SmackDown and not make SmackDown the afterthought. So just let it fucking happen.
But go a little deeper. Go a little deeper. We talked about Orton, talked about Bautista. Triple H just happens to be the executive vice president of talent relations and live event.
And who runs SmackDown? Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it Triple H's former stablemate and very good friend, the Road Dogg?
Oh, that's right. And by the way, Mr. Flair, Isn't his daughter like the main woman on the roster?
Well, I mean, she's the co-main woman on that roster.
Because, Becky, like, I don't want no smoke. Please don't jump me while I'm taking a shower or nothing. My bad.
We all want pictures of the champ. You're right.
Yes, I'll take a picture of you so we can move on. But yes, so I just like what like, sometimes but people just can't be happy. And if you're not happy, they just can't do. Oh, yes, go ahead.
But
yes.
Rance, yes, I want to shit on the WWE because they can't do anything right because I hate them.
Oh, if that's the case, my good friend, I would venture to tell you to shut the fuck up and stop watching. Because
I don't want to have to do that because they should just do what I want all the time because it's all about me.
Oh, okay. Well, let me go get my violin real quick while you continue. Because that's, you can cry these tears and I don't really give a fuck. Like, I am all for expressing your opinion, feeling a certain way, and as much of a WWE homer as I am, they don't get it right all the time. But who the fuck does this hurt?
It doesn't.
Okay.
People just need something to bitch about because they can't find anything else on SmackDown to complain about right now. Because SmackDown's been putting in several weeks of very high-quality television.
Speaking of that, can we give Road Dogg his flowers? Because it was just a year ago y'all was trying to fire that man. Can we give him his flowers?
I feel like a lot of us need to eat some crow, y'all. Like, Road Dogg's not infallible. He still, you know, can not necessarily knock everything out of the park. But SmackDown has been on fire for several weeks now. And one thing that I've really loved that SmackDown is doing is SmackDown is creating a connected and shared universe within their show. We saw that the best example of that happened between Lana and Becky Lynch and Charlotte and Rusev and Aiden English and all of those stories just perfectly weaving together on Tuesday night. So if you missed it, you're not quite sure what I'm talking about. So Rusev and Lana make their way to the ring on Tuesday, and Rusev calls out Aiden English and wants Aiden English to explain to him why he went and jump zoned Rusev the week before.
On Rusev Day of all days.
Of all days, on Rusev Day. So Rusev calls English out, tells him, you know what, before I fuck your ass up, you gonna come out here and you gonna explain yourself. And then you gonna catch this ass whooping. So Aiden comes out, and in true heel fashion, Aiden is the hero in his story. Which is already a reason why, once again, y'all, I've said it many times, Aiden English is a national fucking treasure.
Oh yeah.
That man is amazing.
Yes.
Also, he got a new mic. Instead of Happy Rusev Day, his mic and his new fresh Aiden English t-shirt say Happy Aiden Day.
Well, he created the gimmick, if I'm not mistaken, right?
And got it over because he has those amazing melodic dulcet tones.
Oh, beautiful. Beautifully said, Kyle. Beautifully said.
But anyway, he comes out there and he shows Rusev two video packages. He starts by saying, you know what, you're right. I did attack you. And I'll own up to that. But this isn't what you think it is. We had some great times together. And the first video package shows all the great successes of Rusev Day and the times that Aiden helped him out and the birth of the gimmick and all of the wonderful hammy goodness that was.
70,000 people chanting Rusev Day at WrestleMania 34.
Yeah, just all of the hammy goodness that was Rusev Day. And then he says, but you know, you went and ruined it and threw it all away when you brought back her. Her being Rusev's wife, Lana, of course. So then video package number two proceeds to show us all of the misfortune that Rusev has suffered since Lana started coming back to the ring with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then Aiden wraps it up by telling him, you know, we had a great thing going until you fucked this up and you brought her back. And so I am going to kick your ass. And Lana, you're right. You are honest with Rusev. So are you going to tell him about that incident in Milwaukee?
Mic drop. By the way, he really dropped a mic. Gangsta as hell.
Oh, and by the way, y'all, I've heard a lot of people that have been speculating that the big reveal that Aiden's going to have next week about what happened in Milwaukee is that him and Lana had an affair. And let me tell you why you're wrong. You're not wrong because Aiden English is afraid of Rusev. It's not about that. You're wrong because for those of y'all that don't know, Aiden English is married to one of Eddie Guerrero's daughters.
He is a Guerrero by marriage, yes.
Aiden English is married into the Guerrero family from El Paso, Texas, on the border with Juarez. Aiden English don't want the fucking smoke of an affair.
There's smoke in the air. He don't want none of that. No. There's tons of Guerreros, and if you fear Samoans or Polynesians or Tongans, we love you.
Definitely. We don't want the smoke.
No smoke.
We don't.
No smoke. You might want to fear them Guerreros and them Hispanics. It's Latinos run deep. Just saying.
So yeah, Aiden didn't have an affair because Aiden's not that stupid. But some shit happened in Milwaukee. And what makes this a great example of shared universe storytelling is the next scene we see is who should show up and in the middle of a conversation between Lana and Rusev, but that dastardly girl herself, Becky Lynch.
The champ. As she likes to be known. Yes.
And realistically, right now, Becky Lynch is my WWE champion.
I've heard people say that.
No disrespect to AJ, who is
no. That's not... all disrespect to AJ, bro. Stop running. It's okay.
Shh.
It's all right. We keep it a buck here. We keep it a
buck. Yeah, you're right. Fuck it. AJ need to drop that title, and Becky Lynch is the best thing going in the WWE at this moment. she shows up, and she just looks at Lana and looks at Rusev, and she just chuckles and she says, "Oh yeah, so Milwaukee, eh?" So Lana tries to step to Becky, and Becky just looks at her as like, check yourself, bitch. As WWE champion, women's champion, anything involving the women on this brand is my business. And since you like to pretend you're some kind of fucking wrestler, why don't you meet my ass in the ring so I can show you what the smoke is?
Ooh, that's them fighting words, I would think.
Oh, they were fighting words. But Lana Becky can back fight, that shit up.
Yeah, Lana can't fight, but that's not... She can't wrestle fight.
But y'all, this is... The point I'm making, though, y'all, is this is a great example of something that SmackDown's doing really well right now, which is finding ways to keep the show one giant universe instead of a bunch of isolated feuds happening in the same building. SmackDown, in a similar way to what NXT is doing right now, especially with Aleister Black, but just in general, SmackDown is doing a great job of having itself be a brand where everybody is connected and everything that happens matters because everything has repercussions, and it's made for some really excellent television. I mean, they've revitalized R-Truth. The ageless wonder that is R-Truth.
Well, to be fair, R-Truth don't need much revitalizing other than not saying Chuck and Jive, but that's another conversation. I want to piggyback you by, and I'm going to say the same thing you said, but I want to point to one specific thing that I don't think you said or pushed enough. What SmackDown is doing is what we lauded WWE for doing in the late 90s, and that is everybody on the roster has a story. Not just a story, because everybody on Raw got a story technically, but has a story that is coherent and we care about. So it could be as low on the card as what Truth and Ty Dillinger is about to feud with Randy Orton. Ty Dillinger ain't been on TV and had a match on Raw SmackDown in weeks, if not months. Right? Dillinger.
Well, and they've been telling this story 4 months of Ty Dillinger being R-Truth's straight, like, straight in the slapstick comedy of it.
Well, and, I like to go that's his handler. I believe he's his handler.
Yeah. Like, yes. Trying to bring Truth back to the real world. And so then Truth just flips that shit on him a couple weeks later, talking about, dude, I'm trying to teach you something, son. What could you possibly teach me? How to get in the main event of SmackDown Live. Everything makes sense. Everything loops back. Everything matters.
Even I can, and I hear a young IWC person saying, well, what about Shinsuke Nakamura? Yes, he could be utilized better, but have you noticed everything Shinsuke does, Orton continues to come out?
Yeah.
Something will happen between those two. Yeah, I'm telling you. And as a Raw guy, I got to give it up to SmackDown, because from that standpoint, they are killing it. Not to mention that all the stories, especially the main ones, are tremendous.
Yeah, AJ, like, Joe, we haven't even...
Becky, Charlotte, Miz, Bryan, they all are great. Even stories that don't get time to really get fleshed out, like The Bar and The New Day. Great.
Well, and they're finding ways to tie even their main stories together. But just by making Miz versus Daniel Bryan a number one contenders match, you have now woven those two into Joe and AJ.
Absolutely.
And so now, when that shit is done, you can pair those guys off and branch those feuds out and keep some shit going.
Okay, go deeper. A few weeks ago, when Truth made that promo, the reason he did it was because he thought Maurice was Carmella, which caused Miz and Truth, who were formerly a tag team, to have a little beef, which brought Carmella into it. What happened at the beginning of SmackDown this week? Miz and Carmella interviewed Daniel Bryan.
You mean Truth and Carmella? But it's important. No, but it's important.
Truth and Carmella, you're right.
The other part of that is they pulled off the most subtle face turn in the history of turns with Carmella. Carmella went from being like the catty antagonist to just like spontaneous dance break.
and that again to the beauty and the talent of the ageless wonder himself, Mr. Killings. You're absolutely right, man. Again, as a Raw guy, I hate to give SmackDown this much credit, but they killing it, dog. They killing it. They still can't get a higher rating than Raw when they do their worst, but that was a diss. That was a dig. That was a dig, Mr. SmackDown.
I mean, if you can make that dig, I'll allow it. I believe in Raw fatigue.
That's fair.
Honestly, I believe in long week fatigue. Like, that's realistically, like, if NXT as good as NXT is, if NXT was on network television the day after SmackDown and Raw, it wouldn't do as good a numbers as SmackDown does.
Well,
and NXT is great television.
I'm gonna tell you why I disagree with that, homie. Because if NXT was available for regular people to watch, I truly believe that all the people who hate WWE or complain about WWE are fine, because for some reason the detractors, I think that's a fair term.
I mean, we call them the haters. It's cool.
You know, I'm trying to be diplomatic. I got my glasses on today.
Why bother? Yeah. This is The Edge. We're not diplomatic.
I host two shows now. Okay, I have to watch. Shit, Chair
is
Shot
it
Radio.
Because we're simultaneous on Chair Shot. Always use your head.
Oh, look at you. That's look at the slogan. Chair Shot Radio is worse. We roast people over there. So, yes. So, I don't give a fuck. The haters, yes. They seem to think that NXT doesn't fall under the WWE umbrella. So, everything they want WWE doing is they're doing in NXT, even though it's the same people. But I feel like that would be their excuse to say, well, I ain't going to watch Raw. I might pay attention to SmackDown, but I'm going to watch NXT.
You know, that's a fair argument. That's a fair argument.
Yeah.
I'm
going to stick it to the man. Let Vince know we don't like what he's doing. Except, even though he got $2 billion for two shows.
No, I mean, that's a fair argument. For those of you that maybe haven't heard the term Raw fatigue or don't even understand what I'm trying to say, what I'm talking about is just, you imagine, especially if it's a pay-per-view week, you imagine, or a big four, you know, you had TakeOver on Saturday, you had a 4 or 5 hour pay-per-view on Sunday, you had 3 hours of Raw on Monday. You might not have that extra 2 hours, not so much in your time frame, but in your fandom. You might not have two extra hours of fandom and energy for SmackDown on Tuesday. You might catch that shit on Friday or on Thursday because that shit's on Hulu. Or you might hit the YouTube highlights or whatever.
Which are just, I did, for the record, I didn't watch SmackDown this week. I will watch it after we finish recording this episode. But I caught up on it by watching YouTube highlights.
Well, honestly, though, like the reason I brought up Hulu is because unlike Raw, where you can watch it on Hulu and catch like the main parts, but there's a lot that's cut out. If you watch the Hulu version of SmackDown, you're still getting everything. Basically the entire show.
Because 2 hours. And then I have to cut it so bad. Yeah.
Exactly. So because of that, you can watch SmackDown exclusively on Hulu. And honestly, you might enjoy it better if you're someone who doesn't like commercials or who likes to skip through video recaps. Because a lot of those are cut.
It's a wonderful time in the business, especially considering WWE, in that TV ratings don't matter as much because the deals are made and it's about the reach that the shows make. But, and part of that reach is all of the access to watch it. Hulu, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. They got a Snapchat. Like, you have all of the, not mentioning the award-winning WWE Network for only $9.99 a month.
Cheaper than Uncle Dave's shit rag.
By the way, we ain't gonna go there. I don't have the energy for that.
All I'm gonna say is for our new listeners from the Chair Shot who maybe don't know how we roll here on the Edge. The producers of the Outsider's Edge are in agreement that when it comes to Dave Meltzer, you can miss us all with that bullshit.
I feel like we're overdue for a Dave Meltzer diss track. We might have one coming.
I mean, I'm down. You know, we could do it on our brand stand debate. That's what I decided to call it, the brand stand.
So, as my esteemed colleague Kyle just mentioned, we have in the works. And you know what? I just noticed you're wearing red, I'm wearing blue.
Even though it's opposite?
It's the opposite. So I'm a Raw guy.
Because we're the Golden Lovers.
We're the Golden Lovers, yes. And we will be speaking some New Japan here in a minute. But I am a Raw guy. Kyle is a SmackDown guy. Carl don't watch shit. So, and I mean that affectionately. So since it is, we're kind of in debate time with the primaries and shit coming up.
You mean the midterms.
It's all the same to me.
It's all right. I'm a government teacher, so I have to be particular.
It's some election coming up. Somebody running.
We don't get political on this show, so we won't bore you.
No, not at all. Well, we're gonna get political in wrestling.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
We're gonna do a mock debate, and I'm going to be the person representing SmackDown. Kyle's gonna be the person representing. I'm gonna represent Raw. Kyle's gonna represent SmackDown. Carl's gonna be the moderator, and we are going to ask for your vote, and you can tell us what do you like it, do you not? And please, I'm asking you because I know I'm gonna be fighting from behind already. I'm asking you, let the debate decide our fate.
I don't think you're fighting from behind. I think I'm fighting more from behind because, like, and this is part of being a SmackDown stan. Mm-hmm. If you've stand for SmackDown as hard as I have for as long as I have, you've always got a little bit of a chip on your shoulder because SmackDown is little brother.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we were just talking about it. SmackDown's producing some of the best television that they've produced since their really great run in 2016. And they still can't sniff Raw's numbers.
And since the apparently it's news what the rating is, Raw got the worst rating ever, even though it was still top five in the demo. But, you know, those facts don't like to be mentioned. But, yeah, you're right. So there's one thing you mentioned. You talked about it. I want to go a little deeper because I got some questions to ask. So this Aiden English, Aiden Day thing. First and foremost, can I say I told y'all so? Can I do that?
I mean, you can. We don't have to acknowledge it, but you can say it.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, I don't need acknowledgement. I can pat myself on the back. Shout out to Barry Horowitz. I told y'all Aiden was turning. I told you why he was turning, and I told y'all that Aiden is the reason that Rusev Day and Rusev in general was over in his most recent iteration. But my question to you, sir, Mr. SmackDown, is will this escalate Aiden to a point where he can stay at his level, or is this going to be, all right, right, kid, we're going to throw out there, see what happens. We're going to pull you back. Where do you see Aiden in the next 3 to 6 months following this feud? Because I'm sure this will be a 2-3 month feud, right? Where do you see him following this?
Well, that's a hard question because as great as they've been doing television-wise for the last couple of months, creative is notoriously inconsistent.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to pushes, and especially when it comes to mid-card guys, which is what Aiden is. Aiden's a mid-card guy. Yes. And there is nothing wrong with that. A lot of people think that that is an insult. Some of our favorite wrestlers of all time are realistically mid-card guys.
Somebody got to do a job.
Yeah. And I mean, Kane was one of my favorite super heavyweights of all time. Kane's really upper mid-card. He occasionally got a top belt run, but he's a mid-card guy. That's where Aiden's ceiling probably is. Aiden English has the charisma and the mic skills, and he's good enough in the ring to be a consistent mid to upper mid-card act, especially as a heel, especially if he plays up that theater background he's got, because he can do the obnoxious artist shit that will push people's buttons.
Okay.
The reason it's hard to project where it's going to go for him, though, is he is facing Rusev. And I know that you're on record as saying you think that Rusev will win a title within the next calendar year.
Yes.
And I would love that. I stand for Rusev. But Rusev is the most inconsistently pushed guy of his class, I would say.
Okay. I mean, historically, yeah. But, I mean, this past 8 months has been pretty consistent.
Okay. His past 8 months, he's been consistently featured, but not consistently a winner.
You're right.
And if we're talking about elevating other stars...
You got to win.
Yes.
That's fair.
So I don't. The other thing that's working against Aiden right now is that SmackDown is very heel heavy in terms of its best performers are all on that side.
And they even got a face
in the mid card. Even in the mid card, you've got Nakamura as the U.S. champion. You've got Orton is in that mid card scene. Go away, Randy Orton. You've got Joe doing Joe, you've got Miz doing Miz. Like, the card is very hard to break at the top and the heel side. Andrade.
Yeah. Andrade, yeah. I mean, Cesaro and Sheamus could split up at any moment and still be main event to the upper. Yeah.
Luke Harper could wrestle well. Rowan is out as a heel because that's where Harper's natural alignment is.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, man. You're right.
So, like, that could also work against Aiden.
Yeah.
Although Raw needs heels. Although Elias and Aiden English kind of do the same thing. Only I think Aiden English does it better because he's allowed to, like, do more shit. Elias is better at getting heat.
There you go.
Honestly, Elias has a higher ceiling. Yeah. But they don't ever do anything with Elias. He does the same thing every week. He comes out, starts to sing, gets interrupted, doesn't have a match, lather, rinse, repeat.
That's fair, but if I could speak on the Elias thing real quick, I think this is what I think their goal is with him. And I've expressed to you guys numerous times how personally tired of Elias I am because of the repetitiveness of it, but here's what I think the goal is. I think the goal is to make Elias almost a actual star outside of wrestling before he becomes a star in one. Because... I know it sounds ridiculous, but just I'm looking at everything that's happened since he's really started getting his rise. He's had many feuds with Cena and Jimmy Fallon. He's had many feuds with almost all of the celebrities that come on or are around, right? He actually released an album, a real album. He's done real press for that album. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's
got to interact with Trish.
Got to interact
in Toronto.
With exactly. So I feel like their goal is to make him a real big deal as a person and a character, because they know, as much as IWC fans hate to hear it, that carries more cachet in wrestling than, what can you do in the ring? And Elias is good in the ring. Not great, but good.
Well, he's one, and I would say Aiden English has as well. He's someone who has shown consistent improvement.
Yes.
He's not Dean or Seth or one of those guys, but he's shown consistent improvement.
Yes. And he has the ability to have a good match with the right person.
Yeah.
But I just feel like this is built, and I know this is damn near blasphemous. He's building up to a crescendo against Rocky. It just feels right. He feuded with Jericho when Jericho came back for the hot minute he did. I say hot minute, literally a day, but okay. But like, you know what I'm saying? So they're not going to do that to just anybody. You know what I'm saying? You know how many people, like, you think, imagine how big Jericho would be, much bigger, as ridiculous as it sounds, if WWE had gotten behind Fozzy years ago and released an album through their damn, like.
Well, especially because Fozzy's now really getting mainstream success on their own.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, and they gave Reliance a four-song EP. Like, the last person they did that for was Cena, and look how that turned out.
By the way, if you're Jericho, I don't want to say, like, that you're actively angry, but how jaded would you feel about some shit like that? Like, man, I had a fucking band forever. You didn't want shit to do with that. I gave this motherfucker an EP.
I'm gonna tell you the truth. He doesn't give a fuck. I'll tell you why. Because sometimes you feel more justified doing it on your own.
That's fair. I mean, and Jericho don't give a fuck because, I mean, Jericho made great fucking money. Right, he's a Hall of Famer. He's so good, like, he is his own thing.
Absolutely. And nothing about Fozzy has anything to do with wrestling. So it'd be different if it had something to do with wrestling.
He's become big within hardcore rock circles. I know because I have some friends who are really into that scene. Yeah. And, like, Fozzy was in the Charlotte area recently, and they were shitting over it.
But it's not just
like, that's awesome. Get Jericho's autograph and send it to me because I don't give a shit about Fozzy. No disrespect. They're good.
They're a really good band.
Yeah, they're a really good band. No disrespect. But, like, if I go see Fozzy, I'm going to see Chris Jericho because I support the GOAT.
Sure. But what I mean is, none of those guys were in wrestling. None of those guys wrestle. Jericho truly was like, on my off time, I'm going to start a band. Because when I was a kid, I wanted to be two things, a rock star and a wrestler. And I'm going to do this.
He became both.
Both of them. And I'm going to be completely separate from wrestling and WWE. So Fozzy has nothing to do with wrestling. It's just, it's like as if he goes home and he's Mongoose McQueen, but he comes to work and he's Chris Jericho. You know what I'm saying? If, for those of you who don't know, he used to call himself Mongoose McQueen when Fozzy was first starting, so that he could have some ambiguity between the characters. Now he don't give a shit because he's the GOAT. But but I feel like that's the deal for Elias. And in that note, Aiden can't measure up to that because Aiden's ceiling is, I think, where it is. Aiden will be a damn good U.S. champ one day. But I don't think his ceiling goes any higher than that. No,
oh, come on. Let's at least let him have the Intercontinental title because the U.S. title don't mean shit. Never has meant shit.
But
ain't ever
I see he's not
shit.
On SmackDown, homie. So I got to go with
realistic know,
shit.
I know, but I mean, he could move brand someday. It would break my heart, but it could happen.
It's possible.
He's a character.
Yeah. He's definitely a guy that'll throw in a damn brand split next year or something. But I'm really interested in his rise because I'm gonna compare him to somebody that I know a lot of you guys will hate me comparing, but I'm gonna compare him to gender, and I realize that they're tremendously different. But I appreciate people who identified their flaws, identified what they're not doing wrong, took that and really did something about it, improved, and came back with a different attitude and the one ability to do better, and were rewarded for it. I feel like Aiden has done that much similar.
I don't think that's an unfair comparison, really, because let's be real. The reason people hate gender isn't even really because of anything gender did.
No,
it's because I don't even think it's because he got pushed. It's because he got pushed that far that fast.
Yeah.
I think that if they did with Jinder's character, or that mm-hmm. particular character, what they are doing with Aiden and had him start in the lower mid card and stew and figure the character out and then gradually kind of pushed him up the card, people might never have liked Jinder as a wrestler because he's mediocre. Like, yeah. he's not bad. He's not yeah. great. He's mediocre. But they would have at least been like, all right, well, that character's put in a lot of work. And if they want to make him a transitional champion for a couple of months, then, like, I can live with that.
But can I tell you why that bothers me?
Oh, you can.
Because you shouldn't feel like a heel wrestler deserves a title. I hate that. I hate that we're like that. I hate that we're like, oh, well, yeah, you know what? They deserve a title. No, they're heels. So if we go by the story, nothing about Jinder was redeeming for us to want to see him be in that position.
Yeah, but I also think you've got to remember the fake sport aspect of sports entertainment in that titles are supposed to matter. And so
I never believe that, but okay.
Well, you might not believe it, yeah. but a lot of fans do. Sure. Titles are supposed to matter. Companies build them as if they matter. Companies hype them as if they matter. So when people who shouldn't be anywhere near that prop that they've made you think is super important.
Okay. So that's it right there. Who are we to say somebody shouldn't be near it or not? Because one person picks who wins and who loses.
You're okay. Again, the crux of what you're saying is not wrong. However, people weren't basing that opinion on nothing. They were basing it on the story that was told to them by that character. If I have seen Curtis Axel lose 400 matches in a row, uh-huh. and then he wins the WWE title, something about that shit don't make no fucking sense.
You're right, but you're not. But what you just said is not the story that was told. The story that was told was Jinder can't do it by himself. He found two guys that are flunkies for him and continues to sneak his way to wins. But nobody wants to talk about that because it's Jinder. Jinder never won clean. Jinder never beat nobody clean. So there's no difference between what Jinder's doing and what Honky Tonk did or what Miz did or what Flair did. He's literally using his heaters to get him over. Nobody talks about that.
Yo, man, why are you hating on these marks for getting worked? Because he was an actual heel who was actually hated, as opposed to all these heels that everybody was cheering for. So, like,
that's not my issue.
Get worked, man.
I love that. That's not my issue. My issue is that we feel that heels should deserve something. No, at the end of the day, like,
wait a minute, hold on. Heels do deserve something. You want to know what heels deserve? To catch that ass whooping.
I like the way you
think. That's
what
heels deserve.
I like the way
you think. They deserve to catch that ass whooping. And if they're going to really catch that ass whooping, they deserve shiny titles to lose when they catch that ass whooping.
Okay, you lost me there, but okay. I've never cared about... No, I'm going to say no, okay, I don't care about titles.
I
know it's me, yes.
May not, but I'm just going my personal preferences, but within the presentation of the show. Anytime any title is on the line, they tell you that this matters because of the title or how prestigious it is to be champion. They bring up the history of who's held the belt for the longest. So they are acknowledging that they want you to think titles matter.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If they matter that much, then how come when, say, one night at Unforgiven Randy Orton lost the title to Triple H, and Triple H defended it against Umaga, and then Triple H lost it again that night to Randy Orton. Or when people throw titles in the trash, or when people hold titles for years and only defend it two or three times, all this, like, it's not as organic or as simple as I think you're making it out to be. And much like you feel with me, you're not wrong. I get what you're saying, but I feel like we pick and choose what we want to pay attention to, what matters to us.
I would argue that throwing a title in the trash is only a big deal if you think the title matters. So if you build the title up to matter, that makes that act have the effect that they want it to have.
That's fair. I can now. That's what argument I will accept. I can agree with that. But I feel like this, and I feel like not just in wrestling, this is in all aspects of entertainment. We pick and choose what matters to us.
Of course we do. We're humans.
Yeah, absolutely. But
it's just like being a sports fan. Sports fans overemphasize championships historically. You know, I'm a big college football fan. I went to / am getting multiple degrees from the University of South Carolina. So, like, I am a diehard fan of my team. Mm-hmm. The great thing about being a fan of a team that never wins shit is that I can say I'm a true fan because I watched these motherfuckers go 0-11 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Like,
the ticket holder.
I remember the year when they finally won a game. It was the first game they'd won in like 30 games. The student section was so lit, they tore the fucking goalpost down. That's how lit they were to win one fucking game.
But sports is real, and we know wrestling is not real.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be real to feel real, man. Feels real.
Okay, but at the end of the day, you got to wake up.
It's not. You're right.
That dream I had with me on a boat with Naomi and Sasha Banks or whoever.
You were
I had
cheating
to wake
on
up.
Mia Yim. I'm telling Keith Lee. I'm telling Keith Lee that you was cheating on his woman with other women.
Stenographer, strike that from the record, please.
Too late. It's on video now.
Shit, I'm the producer. I can cut this shit.
No, but okay. So I'll tap into my theater background for a second, okay. And I'll talk about willing suspension of disbelief, which is a huge crux if you're going to be a fan of something like pro wrestling.
Sure,
you have to have the willing suspension of disbelief. For a lot of people, the thought that championships matter is how they maintain that willing suspension of disbelief because it ties it into the sport aspect.
Well, that's – and I can give you a perfect example of a person. Chad Matthews is that guy.
Yeah, like I can tolerate the silliness because I get that illusion of legitimate competition because wins and losses and titles and shit are supposed to matter.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk about wins and losses for a minute here in a second, and stuff that's supposed to matter. We got to talk a little Raw. And the one thing I think that I really want to talk to you about is, of course, my brothers in Justice, my fellow hounds, the Shield had a bit of an issue this week.
So to Shield and the Hounds, I heard because I have not seen Raw yet for this week.
As I haven't watched SmackDown, by the way.
Yeah, we are both consistent in our viewing habits. I heard that some tag teams that had been Geek Squadin' had some good performances this week. Is this true?
Well, anytime the Revival have time to wrestle, they get great reviews. They can wrestle. Is that the problem? Nobody cares about them. But the match was tremendous. The match between Ziggy Mac and the Revival was tremendous.
Well, I also heard good things about Authors of Pain versus Roman and whoever Roman partnered.
Oh, but see, I don't consider... Okay, the Authors are technically part of the Geek Squad, but they, like...
The Authors of Pain are only dominant because they face the Job Squad every week. The Job Squad is even below the Geek Squad.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if we're going to get a Revival to benefit of the doubt for what they did in NXT, the Revival is the most dominant team to ever come out of NXT. So, yeah, Authors of Pain. But yes, the Authors of Pain and Corbin had a great match with the Shield. But, I mean, the Shield could wrestle
you know
three
what?
Broomsticks to a great match.
I don't know. You know, that impresses me. Anytime you can carry this version of Baron Corbin, the Chinlock King version of Baron Corbin, to a fun match, I'll give it props.
I like Baron, man.
I'm not shitting on Baron himself. I'm saying this particular version of this character is Chinlock City, and Chinlock City is Channel Change City.
That's fair. And it was high impact, high intensity. It was your standard Shield match. But the thing of note was the Shield opened the show, and this was cringeworthy, but it was on.
Are you talking about the saddest photo in the history of the
brand?
Was
a part. Yes, there was a moment in that promo where Roman said, "It's all about these," and Roman holds his title up, Seth holds his title up, and Dean is in the middle with his hands in his pocket, looking down with the all shucks pose, and it hurt.
Well, it also hurts as a SmackDown person because Dean was one of the people who helped make it so good in 2016.
He was the anchor.
And if anything says the relationship between Raw and SmackDown, it's that the two Raw guys are holding belts. And the SmackDown holdover is standing in the middle saying, "Aw, shucks."
But I love from a story standpoint where they're going with this because, number one, the Dogs of War, as they like to be called, know that if the Shield's a cohesive unit, odds are you ain't going to beat them. They're, as WWE has said, the best faction to ever exist. I agree with that, but that's another conversation. So they decided to use some mental warfare and go to Ambrose, Ziggler in particular, and try to convince him that, look, I know they're your brothers, but you know what's up. They really care about you. When you were out injured and you almost died from an infection, from MRSA in your arm, did they call you? Did they come see you? Did they text you? They got championships. Do you think that they want you to succeed? You think they want you to come after them? You know what's up. So I know they're your brothers, but you know what? You need to stand with us because you know that they're going to turn on you eventually. I mean, Seth done it before, hasn't he? And Dean gave him the ponder. This is what made it, and I love this little wrinkle of it. What made it even that much more interesting was Seth, a.k.a. the Architect, goes to Drew later on in the night and says, Drew, look, man, you know Ziggler's just using you, right? And Braun, you really think he's gonna have your back after he's done using you? And pulls the same shit to Drew. So later on, Drew goes to Ambrose and says, look, man, I know Ziggler talked to you earlier, but Seth came to me. So if Seth's coming to me trying to get me to turn, why do you think he's doing that? You don't think he's scared? You don't think he knows that you're questioning him or you're thinking you're worried about him? So they have the match. Dogs of War come out, sit on chairs and watch on the ramp. Matches on the chain. And the final sequence shows Rollins hitting a stomp on one of the guys, I don't remember, and then doing, like he does, two concurrent suicide dives. Ambrose comes in, fights with one of the authors, or might have been Corbin, I don't remember. Hits him with Dirty Deeds, and then he bounces off the ropes and hits another dive. Roman comes in, spear, pin, 1, 2, 3. Roman and Seth are in the ring celebrating. Dean is on the ground. Roman tells Dean to get in the ring so they can celebrate. Dean walks in between the ramp and the ring and sits there and kind of hits the thinker pose and ponders. And the Dogs of War are like, come with us. And the Shield and the ring are like, no. It was eerily reminiscent of the night Seth turned on him. And finally, Dean does a big sigh, goes in the ring, hits the Shield pose, and they hug. So, question to you is, I think most of us have expected that Ambrose was going to be the guy to break up the Shield in some form or fashion, whether it's viciously or it's he's going to leave, whatever happens. What do you think about that foreshadowing, number one? And number two, where do you think it goes? Because I think the goal is triple threat at Mania. We like 6 months away from that. So what are you thinking?
I mean, my instant thought is that sounds like planting the seeds for a red herring.
I thought the same thing.
At least in the short term, I don't know. Something about it seems too obvious. And when WWE does things really obvious, I expect them to pull a swerve, like have Seth do it again. Because he's a known commodity and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm on record as saying I think that Dean's character, even the way it is currently presented, it would be more interesting if Dean were to turn and be more of a darker character version of himself.
Psycho Dean, real Psycho Dean.
Yeah, legitimate Psycho Dean. But I don't really know where they're going with this, and a lot of that is just because I don't watch Raw consistently enough to know who the major players are.
Well, you know who the major players are.
Well, yeah, it's those six and the Geek Squad. That's basically Monday Night Raw.
Finn gets love, Bobby Lashley gets love, and Corbin gets love, but that's it.
Speaking of Bobby Lashley and the authors of Pain and all this, you know, I've given it a couple weeks and I just still don't know how I feel about the 205 guys being like everybody's like ring bitches.
Well, we were going to talk about that. We were going to talk about that next. So, I mean, if you want to have anything else you want to say about the Shield or put a bow on that.
All I know is if I got my personal preference, like personal preference would be for Dean to be the one to turn on them, because I do think Dean would be more interesting as a darker character. My second preference to that would be the one that I know is not going to happen, which is Roman.
Yeah.
Yes. And the reason Seth doing it would be my least preferable alternative is because
already.
Exactly. I've seen it before. It's like chocolate ice cream. I know it tastes good. I know I enjoy it. But if I've got the option of chocolate, mint chocolate, or Rocky Road, chocolate is my least preferable option here because it's an old reliable and I know what it's like.
Right. And Seth is at the apex of his facedom right now.
Yeah.
Singularly, not Shield-wise.
And the only thing that could make him more sympathetic is after he redeemed himself, only to be then...
turned on.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And but I think originally they were going to do that until Jason Jordan had what apparently is looking like a career ending.
We need to talk about Jason too one of these days. I don't think Seth was... I think Seth is going to be... was always going to be a face for the foreseeable future. This is just conjecture here.
Well, no, I mean, I think they were building towards Jason turning on Seth until Jason got, like, that debilitating injury.
Well, Jason was playing heel the whole time anyway.
Yeah.
But you absolutely... we need to have the conversation about Jason because that is...
it's tremendously
tragic to see somebody that young, that good-looking...
It's Paige all over again.
No,
only,
it's not.
only it's worse because Paige at least had a pre-existing condition and we knew it, and she had some good years on the top.
Well, let me tell you why I disagree with it being Paige. Even though Paige is 24, 25, Paige had a full career. Paige has had WrestleMania matches. Paige has been a multiple time champion. Paige has had iconic feuds. Paige has done. Literally, and I hate to generalize, but she's done damn near everything she could do as a professional wrestler in the WWE. Jason Jordan hadn't done anything. That's why it's a tremendous difference. So, much like Brian, if Brian would have retired after he got his injury, there's nothing else he could have done. He'd done everything. Paige had done just about everything. Now, I'm not saying she couldn't have done it more and more and more, but she had accomplished every goal. Jason Jordan has never wrestled a WrestleMania match. Jason Jordan has never been in the Royal Rumble. Jason Jordan probably has he had one singles match on a pay-per-view? Jason Jordan hadn't done anything. You know what I'm saying? After spending all that time, and that's not, I'm not saying this from a negative standpoint, after spending all six of those years in FCW NXT, after all the numerous reboot after reboot after reboot, new gimmick after new gimmick, we'll try this, we'll try that, we're going to put you with Ty Dillinger. Okay, that don't work. We're going to put you with all the wrestlers and make it called Shoot Nation, but no, we can't do that because shoot, pow, pow, put you with Chad Gable. Well, that's not working. We're going to reboot that and make it work right and this and that. Break y'all. After everything he went through just to get to the main roster, to get his single shot, and then it's pulled away from him, that is tragedy. I don't want to compare injuries, but it reminds me of Draws. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh, gosh. Don't even mention that one. Oh,
that's what it reminds me
that,
of.
That, like, breaks my heart to think about.
Now, that's God, I hate that we have to speak so morbidly, but from a living standpoint, Draws is the most, I think, is the most tragic.
Well, what makes Draws the most tragic to me, it's not even just from the living standpoint. It's also from the standpoint of it was just a complete freak accident that still haunts D'Lo Brown.
To this day.
Like, he will tell you straight up, it is one of the lowest points of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just, oh my gosh, I don't want us to get too much into it because, like, I'll get real sad.
Yeah, so let's move on. Let's move on from that. But yeah, Jason, man, look, here we at the edge. I know Kyle's not
lots
necessarily praying,
no,
man.
But lots
I
of
am
love for Jason.
Yeah, love and thoughts and
lots
and all of that. Yes. Let's do this. Let's have this 205 live conversation because I talked with Platt about this on Church Out Radio. But I appreciate that these guys are getting a chance to build their characters and show their ability to be more than just wrestlers on Raw. My problem is, I have two problems. Number one, I think the problem that you have, I said that for last, but my first problem is I hate that these guys are
different characters on each show.
Right. And Platt cited Triple H, but I told him the difference between that is Triple H is an owner on one show and an authority figure on another, whereas these guys are both essentially wrestlers. Right? So I'm going to play heel on this show and face on this show. And like, so that bothers me, right? Personally, because
it bothers me too, and I don't care if they want to make meta references to it on 205. Like, I don't care if Leo Rush wants to make little jokes to Drake about, oh, well, aren't you over there doing this, this, and that? Like, no.
Yeah.
It's inconsistency. Yeah. You're either this character or you're that character. Pick one.
Right.
If you want to be the Authors of Pain guy as your new thing and you just want to be a dick general manager now,
and which fine. We know Spud can do. Yes,
but I mean, Rockstar Spud can do literally anything.
Yes.
He is a chicken shit into chicken salad performer.
Absolutely.
So, like, Rockstar Spud can do anything. Drake Maverick Absolutely. Will make it work. That's not what I mean, but I'm with you. This, I'm going to play the straight-laced, down the middle William Regal general manager on 205 mm-hmm. Live, mm-hmm. but I'm going to be the dastardly heel break mm-hmm. shit guy on Raw.
He was cheat up a storm in a six man tag.
That's what I'm saying. Like, nah, son, nah.
And the second thing is, I don't know where they stand on the ability for cruisers to have a chance to move up and do other things. That was Neville's beef. We've had this conversation before, but I think you alluded to it. It looks bad to me, and if it looks bad to me, I'm sure it looks bad to everybody else, that they're good enough to be on your show to talk, but they're not good enough to be on your show to wrestle. That almost feels like they're, and I hate this word, but kind of pseudo burying their own talent.
It makes them look like a sideshow.
Well, they are a sideshow. I would say something. I would say it makes them look like a joke.
Well, no, when I'm saying sideshow, I mean it makes them look like the Carney-style sideshow.
Oh, like, got you. Like they're minis.
Yeah, like they're just these little cast-offs. Oh, look at the cute little vanilla midgets. They can talk good.
And to add to your point, the joke that Elias and Kevin Owens have for Leo Rush, that he's a kid, and they had Kevin Owens had the KO show, talk show, with Elias playing and stuff, and Leo Rush came out to introduce Bobby Lashley. And when he came out, they were like, oh, we knew you were going to come. We got something for you. And they had a kid's, like the seat that the little baby sit in at a restaurant. A booster seat. And yeah, and you know, and it was hilarious. It was funny as hell. But yes, because Leo is, and by the way, quick tangent, all of this said, I love Leo and Lashley together.
Leo is what Lashley needs because Bobby Lashley, like, even TNA knew this, and TNA fucks up everything, but even they were smart enough to know Bobby Lashley cannot be solo. Bobby Lashley needs
You're right, but even then,
a mic guy.
Lashley was spitting fire in TNA, though.
But he still needs someone to make him more inherently interesting.
Absolutely.
Because there's something about Bobby Lashley. You know, we talk about it. Bobby Lashley has all the intangibles, but he doesn't have it. Something about Bobby Lashley does not make me mm-hmm. want to watch what he's doing. I'm just like, oh, look at this big dude. I bet he's, oh yeah, I guess he's decent enough in the ring. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas Leo Rush's only problem is that he, much like Rockstar Smut, well, and he's Rockstar Spud level small. Spud's problem is he's so small, he's not believable against literally anybody.
Yeah.
Spud's not believable against the other cruisers. He's so small.
Spike Dudley.
Exactly. And Leo Rush has that exact same problem. And it's unfortunate for both of them because they're both really good. And they're both good in the ring, but they're so small.
Right, but I think at least for Leo, Leo has a moveset that, and his speed and his intelligence, leads you to believe that he can last with other cruisers. But the Tom and Jerry type thing they got going, where Leo's gonna get jumped by everybody and just runs and jumps and plays mousetrap against everybody and gets out every time and Lashley comes to save him, is it ain't got. I'm sure I'll get sick of it eventually, but right now it's great. But yeah, talk to me about the cruisers, man. What are you thinking? In fact, this category was your idea.
It was, because I want to talk about both the pros and the cons. And I know that my first pro is something you don't necessarily agree with, but I hope that I'll explain it well enough. I like that now that it's not live, it's being taped before SmackDown. And the reason that I like that is because the crowd is bigger. It just is.
Well, can I say this real quick before you go? Real quick.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it now that they're not playing it to be live.
Yeah, okay.
That was my only issue. You can't run it live before and change SmackDown from 7 to 9 to 8 to 10. Mm. Now that it's literally going to be taped and showed, I'm fine with it now. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, then yeah. I like it because, again, the crowd is bigger. Here's the thing, y'all. When people go, and I know this because I've gone to SmackDown tapings during the 205 era, and I've stayed for 205, but people go to SmackDown to see SmackDown. And a lot of your average audience doesn't even know who the fucking cruisers are.
Or care.
So when they come out, these randos that they've never seen before, they're just like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm ready to go home. So by having them warm the crowd up and let the wrestling be the thing that gets them over with the pre-show crowd, because pre-show, that's good enough.
So can I say that the fans don't give a shit about just wrestling?
I mean, you could make that argument, but here's...
Because if they did, wouldn't they stay for 205?
Not if they don't know who any of the people are.
But if it's just about the wrestling, why do you care? That's the argument. The wrestling versus entertainment argument is strictly about the intangibles matter more than what's happening in the ring. So if I don't know the people who's wrestling, I don't care about them wrestling. That's exactly what you're saying about 205.
But I think you're misunderstanding my reason, though.
I'm talking about your reason. I'm just throwing shit at you.
Because the reason why it is the way it is because I can see anybody have good wrestling matches. Because almost everybody now is a good wrestler. It's not like it was in the Attitude Era. In the Attitude Era, being a damn good wrestler was enough because there was a lot of hot shit in that era on Nitro and Raw. Both had a lot of garbage.
Yes, Mike Enos.
Yeah, like...
Kenny Chaos.
The Misfits in Action with General Rection and Sergeant Guns.
Hugh G. Rection.
Yeah, Hugh G. Rection. That's right.
Yes.
So, you know, like, there was a lot of flaming hot garbage in that era. And in that era, when not everybody was good in the ring, that being your only thing was good enough because it did set you apart. Mm-hmm. Oh, he who must not be named is in a match? I know that motherfucker can wrestle. These scrubs that came before him weren't shit, but I know this match gonna deliver.
Oh, Dean Malenko's in this match. By the way, Dean Malenko, who formerly was number one in the PWI.
Yeah, Dean Malenko, the man of 1,000 holds. Even though Chris Jericho is the man of 1,001 holds.
A
thousand and four holds.
Yeah,
and only 600 of them were an armbar.
605, but yeah.
Yeah, y'all. Chris Jericho's been getting lists over for more than 20 years.
You know what? That's the first time that put... You blew my mind. I had never put that together. What?
Yeah,
Jimmy Jacobs got that from. I know it's where he got it from.
Chris Jericho's been getting lists and countdowns over his entire career. Y2J debuted in a countdown.
Number 17, the Moss handle three, the Moss family
the
three
Moss handle, or the Moss covered three handled family credenza. Shout out to Perry Saturn.
Number 18, armbar.
I mean, yo, man, Jericho's been trying to give you the message forever. That's why his finish is the code breaker.
I'm just, we never got it. We never got it. That's great stuff. That's great. Somebody needs to bring it to his attention to see if that he did it on purpose. Or that was just happenstance.
No, but I mean, the point is, like, the reason why being a good wrestler isn't good enough anymore is because now everybody's a good wrestler. Like, I shouldn't say everybody, but most everybody is a good wrestler. You know, the being mediocre in the ring is now like a criticism, whereas in like Hogan's era, being mediocre in the ring was all great. You needed. Mm-hmm. That's all you needed.
But it's a different reason, but it's the same outcome. At the end of the day, the majority of people aren't going to watch two people wrestling. They don't give a fuck about who they are or why they're wrestling.
Now, I do also want to make this point. That is not to say that being good in the ring doesn't matter at all or that it's a bad thing.
Yes,
We are not saying that if they had high quality in-ring action, fewer people would watch. That's not what we're saying. But that's not what we're saying. We're not saying that if they had really good matches, fewer people would watch. We're saying that if they had really good matches featuring people we give a shit about,
there you go.
More people will watch.
There you go.
That, like, we're not saying that improving match quality is a bad thing.
Absolutely not.
Improving work rate is a bad thing, or that
fans can't be the only thing. Yes.
Yeah, or that fans won't appreciate good matches, because they will, because at the end of the day, people bought tickets to a wrestling show. They will appreciate good wrestling. It just can't be all you're bringing to the table. That's why, case in point, I love Drew Gulak. Don't give a fuck about Cedric Alexander.
Exact same thing here.
One fuck. And I'm from Charlotte, y'all. He is from the same town as me. He is the same age as me.
Yeah.
I know people who graduated high school the same year as him, and I don't give a flying fuck about this dude.
Here's what hurts him probably more than anything. Yes, he's not interesting. He doesn't bring anything to the table besides wrestling. But the people he's wrestled, Sans Kalisto,
all interesting.
Fuck that. There you go. Mustafa Ali is interesting as fuck. Most interesting guy on that brand. Drew Gulak is the best heel on that brand, one of the best in the company. Buddy Murphy has come and reinvented himself and made himself one genuine asset to this company.
Well, and he's created that niche for himself, whereas much like, you know, we always give props to Andrade, because you put Andrade in the ring with anybody, and he's going to have a good match, and he's going to make them look good, and he's going to deliver. You put Buddy Murphy in the ring with any of these cruisers, and he is just churning out great shit.
It's hilarious you put those two together, because in real life, they're best friends.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
In real life, they're best friends. I learned something today.
And also, I always love the gimmick of the big guy in the cruiserweight division, because Buddy walks around, if he wasn't cutting weight, at about 230.
Oh, I mean, like, it's a tried and true trope. Matt Hardy v1. The entire, like, birth of that gimmick was him, like, fasting.
Samoa Joe.
In the X Division.
Yes. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. I was giving you shit about the wrestling thing, because, I like to be right, and I love it when I'm proven right. So, yeah, you know, I just want to gloat a little bit, but please, go ahead.
I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of – the other reason I'm in favor of it is I think that – by letting them perform in front of those bigger crowds, and by having the 205 segments happen in front of those bigger crowds, it will get more people to care about more of those characters. Not Cedric Alexander, because he's, as presented, boring, but the characters we just mentioned, a lot of people don't know about them. Drew Gulak is great. Buddy Murphy is great. Mustafa Ali is great. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is awesome, entertaining as hell, fun television. They've got great characters that are easy to latch onto. They're consistent with those characters. And giving them actual decent-sized audiences, as opposed to the SmackDown leftovers of diehards, who are probably the same people watching on the network, can only be a good thing for those wrestlers.
Well, here's the real question. We both agree it's an improvement, and the day that they move them to, the time that they move them to, and when they tape it. right?
I hope they keep it this way when the mixed match challenge is over.
I think they will. I think they will, because that block that they have now on Wednesdays is fire.
Well, yeah, it makes it a great block of television.
Absolutely. But I think the question is, should they eventually move to Full Sail? Or should they keep it before SmackDown?
Can I give a half kind of answer? I don't think they should move it to Full Sail itself, because I feel like NXT and Full Sail are like peanut butter and jelly.
And the tourneys.
They do the tourneys there. But I just feel like the Cruisers should get a permanent building, but I don't want it to be Full Sail.
Oh, get their own building.
Yeah, get their
center stage in Atlanta.
Yeah, something like that. You know, just get their own version of a Full Sail.
Yeah, but see, that the reason that Full Sail
they do Full Sail is because it's already set up and it's got the schools there.
Well, it's in Orlando.
Yeah,
it's down the road from the PC.
Well, it's in Orlando, down the road from the PC, and Full Sail itself is a school that specializes in communications work. So
people are students that are helping set up shit. So,
yeah, they got studio space. They're able to do Full Sail makes sense. I do think they should get a permanent area though, especially if they still had any intention of trying to tour those guys. Because I know for a long time they had talked about trying to tour those guys. If you're gonna do it like the Largo Loop.
Well, they had their one. They had their one test tour, and here's why touring them doesn't work right now. There's nobody that can sell the tour.
Nope.
Which is why, and people hate this. And we need to talk to New Japan here once we're done with this. People hate this, but Ricochet needs to go to 205 Live.
I think the reason people don't want him to is because of what
they
we
don't
were
want
talking
to be marginalized.
About.
They don't want to be marginalized.
Well, no, we were talking about, are they ever going to let the Cruisers be people who move up in the divisions? And people are worried that if Ricochet goes to 205, he'll forever be on 205.
I respect that, and you're absolutely right. I completely
agree. But I think I agree with your argument, because in my opinion, the only way that Cruisers can move up is if we care about them.
And nobody cares.
New Japan doesn't move juniors up just to move juniors up. New Japan waits until people give a shit and then puts a story together to make you give even more of a shit.
Yeah.
And move them up.
And they've had to win everything a million times. Shout out to the Bucks. Oh, yeah. But look at that journalism and journalistic integrity. We're trying to hit the journalistic segue in New Japan. You talked about the Bucks. First and foremost, I am super interested in the fighting. What's it called?
Oh, Fighting Spirit Unleashed. It is their second U.S. show this year. It's from
Long Beach, right?
Yeah. Yep, and it's on Sunday. That will not be the only pay-per-view that the Young Bucks are wrestling this weekend, because fun fact, the Young Bucks were wrestling in a match about 25 minutes ago.
Oh, where was that be, Kyle?
That was in Las Vegas, because, you know, Ring of Honor, that promotion that I like, but I also hate, but I love them, but I also hate them.
Hate watch,
they had a pay-per-view tonight. Death Before Dishonor was tonight.
Like a special pay-per-view that you have to buy?
Yeah, like one of their actual yearly pay-per-view shows was, again, on a random Friday night. Which in and of itself would be one thing. But the reason why this pisses me off yet again is because Ring of Honor is that company that can't promote itself as well as the talent can. Like, your employees should not be better at promoting themselves than you, the company, are.
So you're the Honor Club
member,
right?
Especially not if you're run by a fucking billion-dollar entertainment conglomerate.
So you're an Honor Club member, right?
Yes, I am.
How did you find out about the pay-per-view tonight?
Hangman Page's Twitter account.
Now, this is a dude who pays to watch Ring of Honor every night. And look, so we can quit all the jokes and the bullshit. Like, this has got to stop. This has to stop. These people fucking got the ring. They got the fucking garden in a couple of months. This shit got to stop. It's like, I don't even watch Ring of Honor, but I would never watch Ring of Honor because I don't know when to watch them. This got to stop. It's
despicable. And it's fucking inexcusable if you look at all, and it's fucking inexcusable if you look at All In, because like I know All In was its own thing. I'm not trying to take anything away from what Cody and the Bucks were able to do or any of that. I was there. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But the fact that they were able to sell out a 10,000 seat arena and the company that they work for on its own can't sell out 5,000, like you said, is fucking embarrassing. And here's the other part of that. They got no social media presence. Like, none. Mm-hmm. I follow their Twitter. I follow their Facebook. They put shit on there. I'm not saying they don't put anything on there. But they have no branding. No promotional awareness.
This is the top United States wrestling company in the world, non-WWE. This is the top U.S.-based company in the world.
And it is, y'all, WWE. even Impact stands, it is, because, again, I said it last week, Impact is a Canadian company.
Forget that. If they were American, they're not bigger than Ring of Honor.
Nope.
Ring of Honor is owned by a billion-dollar company. They're not bigger. They're not. I'm sorry. Just because they got a better TV deal, that's because they've been around longer on television. They ain't got shit to do with nothing. Again, they're not bigger.
But again, this is, again, inexcusable. The fact that Impact has better brand awareness than these guys do is in-fucking-excusable.
Yeah,
inexcusable. Jushin Thunder Liger is wrestling tonight, and they didn't promote the shit out of that.
Now, see, I definitely didn't know that shit. I didn't even know they had a card, but I guess I could have guessed what the card was. Jushin Thunder Liger, I didn't know he was in fucking America right now. That's despicable.
Will Ospreay and Jay Lethal are going to have a championship match tonight, and they haven't been marketing the shit out of that.
Now, that's, for many people, that's a dream match.
The main event is the final blow-off. It's a tables match with Bully Ray and Flip Gordon and the blow-off to that storyline in a tag team match.
This shit got to stop, man. This shit got... Look, okay. So let's talk about better things, because it annoys me.
Let's talk about a company they have a working relationship with that does everything in the United States better than they do.
That's probably the only reason why they still are thought of in a positive light. And for the record, I'm not a Ring of Honor fan. I'm not a Ring of Honor stan. But I just hate inequity and dumb shit. And that's stupid.
Well,
it's
but what's
dumb.
What's upsetting
and annoying.
Is well, and what's upsetting is, you know, I say it every week, and a lot of people probably think I'm bullshit, but I want Ring of Honor to do well. Like, I have the Honor Club subscription for a reason. Mm-hmm. Well, we here at the Outsider's Edge put our money where our mouth is. We 100%. Buy and support the things that we want to succeed. Mm-hmm. I want them to succeed. When they're in Atlanta, I go to that shit. When they're in Concord, North Carolina, I go to that shit. Mm-hmm. As long as I'm not working the next day. Mm-hmm. But this fucking company that has a lot of incredibly talented people that mm-hmm. were talented enough and big enough names to sell out a 10,000 seat arena by promoting it their damn selves.
Pretty much.
Needs to do a better fucking job of building a brand.
Making people care about their company. Yeah. So, speaking of New Japan. And by the way, the only reason I brought up the Bucks is because the Bucks are wrestling the Tongans, G.O.D., Guerrillas of Destiny, for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships, which is a match I am infinitely interested in.
By the way, we both picked the Tongans because we don't want no smoke.
And again, they are recruiting. If you are recruiting podcasts, The Outsider's Edge is here for recruitment.
We are 100% willing to listen to all the reasons you're right and everyone else is wrong.
Even us.
Yep. Yep. Y'all are related to Haku. We ain't stupid.
But, so, you guys, y'all been listening to me. Y'all been following me, reading me for a while. So, you know that I enjoy New Japan. I wouldn't call myself a New Japan fan, but I definitely keep up with it. And I watch it when I'm interested. Something caught my eye this weekend. Would you like to break it down, brother?
All right, so this weekend they had a big show. There was a part of this big tour. I want to say it was Destruction in
probably the Destruction Tour. Osaka.
Yeah, this is the Destruction Tour. No, this one wasn't in Osaka. This was in Beppu.
Okay.
Destruction in Beppu is where the big event happened. No, Beppu was the second night. Oh, shit. It doesn't matter. It was the Destruction Tour. It was the last night of the Destruction Tour. Shout outs to our friends, Jeremy and Josh, over at Keeping It Strong Style. They would kill me for not getting the name of the show right, but I know it was the Destruction Tour, and that's the important thing.
And if you want like this broken down, all of this broken down in depth, that's
they got you covered.
Absolutely.
They got you covered because they covered the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. So it was the last night of the Destruction Tour. The main event was Kazuchika Okada versus Tanahashi.
Right. The big Tanahashi's big match of trying to get over the hump going into Wrestle Kingdom.
Yes, because they've been telling a story for the last little bit of Tanahashi and Okada having several matches, and every time they would have these matches, Okada would always come out on top. And so it was the final night. It was just Kobe, Destruction and Kobe. Boom.
Okay.
It was Destruction and Kobe. It was the final night. Tanahashi was putting his G1 briefcase on the line against Okada. Match itself was great. You know, it was a typical Okada-Tanahashi match. They delivered.
If you've seen it, then it's you know what it is.
You know what it is. They delivered. They continue to find ways to deliver even when you think they won't, because Okada's that talented and Tanahashi's the ace. So, like, it was great. So the match ends. And when the match ends, who should turn up? But as Kevin Kelly called him, that son of a bitch. Switchblade Jay White. And Switchblade attacked Tanahashi because, you know, Switchblade and Okada are both members of the Chaos Stable.
Yes.
So he attacks Tanahashi. But then he also attacks Okada, which in and of itself, not that surprising. They've been also telling a story for the longest about how Jay White was joining Chaos reluctantly and how he wanted to take control of Chaos and he was going to build a new Chaos and he was coming for Okada and blah, blah, blah. So him finally doing that in and of itself, not that crazy.
Guess going back to January.
Goes out of the ring, goes, Rocky Romero was on commentary, so he gets in Rocky's face and tells Rocky to give him his chair.
Who's also in Chaos.
Yes, Rocky is also a Chaos member. Rocky won't give him the chair, so he shoves Rocky and takes the chair. So taking Rocky out, he's beat down Tanahashi, beat down Okada. All of a sudden, fucking Yoshihashi comes running down to the ring and proceeds to fall flat on his motherfucking face. And
did he really?
Oh, dude, like bled profusely. I honestly felt a little bad for him, unless that it was like a shitty blade job or something. Because like he came down, he straight up fucking Titus O'Neil'd. And then, like, was a bloodied mess for the rest of that segment.
Oh, wow. So, like, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, like, thanks for coming, Yoshihashi.
Yeah. I mean, Yoshihashi was going to get jump-zoned eventually anyway. It don't fucking matter. But, so he comes to try to mediate the situation. It's not working. Finally, Ghetto comes out. So
Hold on. Explain to people the importance of why Ghetto coming out is.
Well, that was my next point.
Oh, okay,
Ghetto,
sorry.
Who Ghetto is. Because for those of you that are not longtime people, you might not know anything about Ghetto. Ghetto and Okada go back years.
Well, Ghetto is the booker of New Japan.
Yes, Ghetto is the booker of New Japan. That part I should have probably started with. But Ghetto and Okada go back years within the kayfabe of Chaos.
Yes.
Ghetto has been accompanying Okada to the ring. Up until this year, he'd been accompanying Okada to the ring for every match.
Mm-hmm. He's corner man.
He was corner man, or when they did the traditional New Japan multi-mans, he was just Ghetto was his jobber partner.
Mm-hmm.
So if they needed to take that L, Ghetto was there to catch that ass whooping.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year, Ghetto stopped coming to the ring with Okada. And, you know, didn't think too much of it at the time, but I should have, because this is New Japan and everything matters in New Japan because everything is kayfabe.
Well, they had a promo, a backstage promo, where Okada said, hey, we've reached as far as we need to go. I need to go different places. He does. I still love him. We're still a team. He has my back. I have his. But we need to go our separate ways.
Well, but this is still, and that still matters, because after that point, Okada started his whole reinventing Kazuchika Okada thing.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo and whatnot. Yes.
Yeah, after he lost the title and just started to remix himself. So, but Ghetto comes out. And so since Ghetto's, you know, old school chaos and like incredibly well respected and all that shit.
Goes back to the beginning when Shinsuke made it.
Exactly. And so everybody just assumes that Ghetto is there to, you know, handle the shit. So Ghetto takes the chair from Jay White and just like calming the situation down. Jay's standing across the ring from Okada. Okada's got his back to Ghetto, and Jay just keeps like yelling at him. Then Ghetto proceeds to jump zone Kazuchika Okada. Took that chair to the back. Shittiest chair shot. It was a terrible chair shot.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that's not the point. The point is, it makes fucking sense.
100%.
It makes sense. Okada is not the Rainmaker right now. Okada's on some other shit. Chaos was founded by Shinsuke as a heel stable.
100%.
To bring back Strong Style. Ghetto gave a promo after he jump-zoned Okada, talking about how he's going to reinvent New Japan with Switchblade. And this is a new Chaos.
I love it. I love when New Japan has American-ass entertainment storylines. And this is what the fuck this is.
Absolutely, because you know what the questions are now. Where do the other members of Chaos fall?
Ishii. Yano. Makabe. It's a lot
Roppongi
of
3K. Roppongi Beretta. 3K.
Beretta and Dustin, if you will. And what's my man name? Goto.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So yep. it's
well, and our boys over at Keeping It Strong Style have an interesting theory that Roppongi 3K could turn on the rest of Chaos because they've been like throwing subtle shade at Rocky lately.
Well, and
this would give them the opportunity to do that.
Shout out to Rocky, because Rocky revels in his position of getting the shit. Mm-hmm. He's great at it.
Rocky is all about catching that ass whooping.
He catches the fade better than most people. I give him credit for that.
He also records real fire rap intros for anything associated with him. That Roppongi Vice intro is still a fire track.
Not to mention him and Chico, the Luchador, tend to be good friends, I believe. Something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that. It's almost like they're twins, even.
Almost. I don't know. It's weird. But, okay, so this caught my eye for a number of reasons. So we started talking about this before the show started, and you stopped and you said, why are we not recording? So I want to say this, and I know there's plenty of New Japan fans out there, Josh and Jeremy included, who are probably going to tell me I'm wrong. But I realized Bullet Club originally was a heel stable of Gaijins trying to take over New Japan, right? Make their mark. I get that. But singularly, individually, we have not seen in New Japan, I could be wrong, tell me if I'm wrong, in a good while, an American entertainment-esque style heel running roughshod in the main event of New Japan. And what I love about Jay White, and I think Jay White is the most improved wrestler this year, started off with Tanahashi in the fucking dome, right, in the beginning of the year, and now we're moving on to, he's probably going to a match with Okada for the keys to Chaos, whatever you want to call it, this next dome. This dude is about to be in the top four, the vaunted top four of New Japan. Has it ever happened that fast?
I mean,
AJ Styles notwithstanding.
I mean, I'm admittedly the wrong person to ask that particular question because, like, I'm not the young boy. Yeah. I'm not the young boy.
Yeah. The young boy is a wealth of
fan than I know.
Man, he's a dictionary.
Yeah. So,
in fact, you know, we might bring Josh on here in the next couple of weeks to, next week. Well, next week we've got a preview show coming, huh? For the Thunder Down Under. Super Showdown.
I like it better if we call it Thunder Down Under. I think that would have been a better name.
So, Platt called the show in Australia the Thunder Down Under. Hell in a Cell was a Rage in the Cage, and Crown Jewel was a Jam in the Sand. So yeah, there's that. I love it. I love everything about it. I love the story. I love that Okada is finally, Liquid Snake Okada is finally fighting from behind and has something to fight for other than being on top all the time. I love that Ghetto.
Well, and it gives Okada something to do that has nothing to do with the title.
Right. And he can help elevate somebody.
It gives him a long-term story that has absolutely nothing to do with any of the belts.
But if 100%. And if we can bridge this entire show from the very beginning to now, this makes a shared universe because you just said the questions. What does Roppongi 3K think about this? What does Sho and Yo think? What does Ishii, who's... I always looked at Ishii as the Luke Harper of Chaos, as the second in command, right?
Yeah. Well, what do all the other gaijins in Chaos think? Because you've got Osprey, you've got the Best Friends, you've got...
That's a good point.
Like, you've got Rocky. Like, what do all these other gaijins in Chaos, where do they land?
And speaking of that, the old school guys who've been with Chaos from the beginning, Makabe was great, Bashio, but Goto.
Toru Yano.
Yano and Goto. Yeah. Are they going to rock with Gato, who's been with them the whole time?
Well, you know what's really interesting to me, if you think about it, you know, the Japanese stars are more likely to go with Jay the Gaijin, and the Gaijins are more likely to stay with Okada, because the Gaijins are much more pure face.
Which, it brings some intrigue. Does it not?
Well, it does because this is the second faction war that New Japan has started.
And they're both going concurrently, by the way.
but they needed that, though, because a lot of the factions had become stale. LIJ was the only faction that wasn't stale, but LIJ is small, and that's why LIJ is not stale.
And Hiromu's hurt.
Hiromu's hurt, but even so, they're not stale because they're small enough as a group that each of them is only ever doing, like, one or two things. They're not overexposed.
Hashtag push Naito. By the way, does Naito still wrestle? Did he retire? Because I haven't heard his name.
No, him and Suzuki had a great match in the first destruction.
I figured that. I'm just saying that this dude went from being in the main of Universal Kingdom to getting jobbed out to a part-timer who hasn't
shown up
to the company
since. To getting jobbed out to a
part-timer
who it looks like is now going to feud with one of his underlings.
Yeah, exactly. To not even knowing if he's on the show or not. Like, and y'all wonder why I'm pissed about Naito? I'm just saying.
I will say this, though, y'all. You want to know why Naito is a badass? Because even when he ain't got shit to do, he wanted smoke with Suzuki.
Yeah. When you talk about don't give a fuck about your life.
Like, we joke about not wanting smoke with the Tongans, but this man wanted smoke with Minoru Suzuki.
Speaking of Minoru Suzuki, is it fair to say that the most
he's
cohesive...
the scariest motherfucker ever?
Oh, well, we know that, yes. Is it fair to say that he's the most cohesive faction in New Japan is Suzuki-gun?
Them and LIJ.
They're so fractured in that they do their own thing so much. Everything Suzuki-gun does together.
But that actually fits with LIJ's gimmick of the whole Tranquilo thing.
You're right.
Like, they're the don't give a fuck faction.
You're right.
But if we're just talking unity, those are the two most united groups. They're the only two united groups.
Right. Especially
everybody else is fractured.
Especially since the big white guys. I can't think of what they call Killer Elite Squad. Their tag team should be big white guys, but yeah, the Killer Elite Squad. Since they came back.
Yeah, we talked about vanilla midgets. They're like fucking
vanilla giants. But they're a great tag team though. But they've come back and they're hitting it with they're hitting it strong and they want those titles back. We know Sabre's a beast there and Taka is his
dude. Zack Sabre time might be my favorite thing that no one's talking about in New Japan right now.
Zack Sabre,
come over here.
Taka kills it, bro.
Just tap out.
Taka kills it, and then you got Tai Chi out here, who's like
fucking Tai Chi.
He comes out.
He's
like,
won me over the last couple.
Me
months.
Too. I hated the guy, but yeah, the one guy I can't mess with is Azuka. Azuki.
Yeah, I've got no use for Azuka.
Do your thing, brother. But I will say this, it is never not funny seeing him walk through the crowd and all the people who were like half his size are terrified. That's always fun.
But other than that,
you know, he doesn't do anything for me. Yeah, but I New Japan has me so interested that I might go ahead and resubscribe from now until Wrestle Kingdom, because every year I subscribe in January for Wrestle Kingdom, because again, we here at the Outsider's Edge, we believe, we pay for what we want. We support.
And for y'all that want to laugh and make fun and are like, oh, that's super cheesy, y'all, we read all the time about these companies that go out of fucking business, mm-hmm. that you like, you bought their shit or you pirated their shit, and then you're sad that they're not making content anymore. That's why they're not making content anymore.
Nobody buying their shit.
Mm-hmm. Or you complain about your favorite wrestler doesn't get featured or doesn't get whatever. Buy their merch. Especially if they're an independent performer, because their merch is probably where they're making most of their money.
Absolutely. I am a Ty Dillinger fan. Guess what? I have a Ty Dillinger shirt.
Yep. I got a Perfect 10 shirt. I got a Rusev Day shirt. You bet your ass I'm going to have an Aiden Day shirt.
Oh, and what's your favorite shirt you just recently bought?
My favorite shirt, speaking of wrestlers making most of their money off of merch and other things, my favorite shirt belongs to that boss of bosses, famous dick wrestler, Joey Ryan.
Shout out to Joey, because my man is, it's not even finessing. It is, my man is, that talk about ingenuity.
And like, can I just tell you how validated I feel after, like, the discussion we've been having about Joey and how there's all this Joey hate. For those of you that don't know what the fuck we're talking about, Joey Ryan recently tweeted this weekend that he had been hired to work a wedding as Joey Ryan. These people bought him a flight, bought him a rental car, got him a hotel, and paid him his wrestling booking rate.
Just to go to
the wedding and be in character.
Yeah.
And then asked him if he wouldn't mind bringing merch to sell at the wedding.
Talk about the life. Like, and I love what his caption was. It was like, this is my out plan.
Yeah, this is my wrestling out strategy. But it just goes back to what I said when we talked about him at all, and I understand people who don't like Joey because Joey's not for them. I get it. If mm-hmm. you've seen it and it doesn't appeal to your tastes, I understand that. But Joey is just good fun, and that's all he markets himself as. He doesn't pretend to be, you know, this Hall of Famer or any shit like that. He's
a top guy or nothing, yeah.
Nope. He's a guy who will go to a show that's going to sell 50 tickets because 20 people paid to see him dick flip someone. Mm-hmm. Because he loves wrestling.
He loves the business. And he gives back.
Also, those of you that like to shit on Joey Ryan but love to watch PWG, better fucking thank Joey Ryan, because he was one of the founders of that company.
I was about to say, he started that.
You show. Are welcome.
Yeah.
So if you were rocking Bola and are super excited, shout out to Jeff Cobb for winning Bola.
Oh, he did, yeah.
Yeah, he won Battle of Los Angeles. That's he was real deal. Excited about it.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, shout out to Jeff Cobb for winning Bola. But if you were rocking Bola and you're rocking it every year and you talk about how great PWG is and then in the same fucking breath shit on Joey Ryan, you, sir, can eat a bag of dicks. Because if it wasn't for Joey Ryan, you wouldn't have a Bola tournament to fawn over.
Are they Joey Ryan style dicks?
No, they're not radioactive and they won't flip you. Because those would be fun dicks.
That's funny coming from you. That's hilarious.
Listen, guys, I still want my Tyler Bate gram, man.
Hey. Though people, we could have to tell the people that joke one day.
Someday, but not today.
Anything else you got, my brother?
You can find me on Twitter at Dr. S'mores. You can also find our missing brother in arms, Carl, at Outsider Curvin. Hashtag bring Carl back. His column's coming soon, y'all. He's super excited about it. But in all seriousness, we say it all the time. Carl, more than Rance and myself, has like legit family shit that he's got responsibilities to and is not always able to be here with us, but he is family and we love him all the same.
All the same. And the show will, it's always his show. It'll never be anything else. It's just a bigger part of the show as me or Kyle.
Oh, he's a bigger part of the show than me because he's a founder. I'm the new guy.
Well, you said it, not me.
Also, shout outs, of course, to our Scottish brethren, the homies Ricky and Clive.
Yes, at Ricky and Clive, by the way. We were trying to get Rick to stay up with us, but he was like, nah, fuck that, I'm sleepy. But yes, speaking of the rest of Social Suplex, shout out to Run Nation Radio, Animal Nation Radio, Rich and James. Shout out to Keeping It Strong Style, as we said earlier, the young boy, Josh, and Jeremy. Shout out to Grown Men. Watch this shit at Grown Men Pod. Keeping It Strong Style is at KI Strong Style. Shout out to our Chair Shot family at The Chair Shot. Always use your head. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/ChairShot, I believe is the link, and get that good ass merch. Speaking of merch, Outsider's Edge will have merch. I am working with my esteemed, special favorite, perfect, wonderful graphics guy, my boy Mike Fergus, for some shits.
And yeah, and so you'll be able to get your own catch that ass whooping t-shirt.
Ooh, I like that. Wasn't one of them I was thinking of, but it will be now. Yeah, I like that.
Yo, man, if Braun can get these hands, our thing can be catch that ass whooping. Because like, if you listen to the Outsider's Edge, you must be ready to catch that ass whooping for being a mark.
I'm here for it. That ass whooping with a U or O?
We're American, so we'll use O's.
Okay. Whooping. Got you. Okay. Written down. Yes, and of course, I am the co-host of Chair Shot Radio with young Christopher Platt. You can find him at The Real C Platt, Chair Shot Radio. We just got a Twitter again, at Chair Shot Radio. I, of course, am at It's Ray Cash. R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollars. I'll write eventually. Me and Carl will come out one day. I'll come out 2019, he'll come out 2020. I'm gonna do it eventually, I promise.
Who are you lying to, man? Your next column's gonna be about your daughter's debut in the wrestling ring.
I have no comment on that, because that might be a true thing. She wants to wrestle. And so I've created a monster.
Hey, I support people chasing their dreams, because we're just a couple of young men chasing our dreams.
So if you didn't like what you heard, you got to remember,
we chased our dreams, so you got to respect that. Yeah, and you also got to remember that if you don't respect it, we don't care.
Give a fuck.
Not one fuck was given. Just like Free Bella don't give a fuck, we don't give a fuck.
I'm so glad we didn't talk Brie, because I've heard that at every podcast, and me and Platt talked about it. Look, Brie.
She is who she is, y'all. She's going to be at Evolution. Just accept it. It'll be all right.
Yo, Clive actually said that she should get pushed as a shoot fighter to be Ronda Rousey's next opponent. I'm here for it. Anyway, yes. We say all that to say this. Thank you for listening. We'll holler at y'all next week.
Later.